This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:37 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Hezril. And earlier on, we were talking about Budget 2021 and the voice policy vote, whatever you want to call it, the passing of it today, at least, with it now going on to a committee level. So we've been asking you for your thoughts. Just to go through some of them before we head to looking through what the budget means, especially in terms of the amendments. First of all, we have this from Ahmad Shamsul, who says, on the budget, why can't you guys have faith? Must it be as everything must be in your favour? And I think that's an interesting comment because if we sound biased, then I apologise. For me, I think I'm not particularly for or opposed the budget in general. It's just on principle, I think that we do need to hold the government spending, we do need to hold the government accountable for its spending or its planned spending.
Yeah, and on my end, I think I'm more sort of intrigued by the political side of things, right? What this means politically, because like we spoke with Bridget earlier, the reality of it is that it is in a precarious position, right? It's a minority government. I'm just curious as to how all of that could end up impacting the budget.
Mm. And I think, you know, just the interest here is in really seeing how it benefits people or how it favors people, not so much us, but the people as a whole. We also have this from Zane Abrams saying, a budget focused on riding out this pandemic, a bit of ask what you can do for your country, not what your country can do for you, especially on EPF withdrawal. The big question is, where's the revenue coming from to finance expenditure? Will it be more debt? Will the vaccine open up the economy? What about debt handouts?
Yeah, and for me, I think it's overall, just looking at the amendments, when you look at them, they're sort of like extensions of existing policies. There aren't any, I think, new radical measures. So I'm curious as to, you know, whether the government is going to continue taking an approach where they just keep extending things that they've already done in the past, and how that will actually translate to, you know, effects on the rakyat.
So that's something that I think we will ask our guest, Tricia Yeo, the CEO of Ideas. Before that, though, just to quickly run through some of the amendments, we've already covered them, but just as a refresh. So automatic loan moratorium for B40 and SMEs, which will start next year. You can apply if you're M40, but that's the whole thing. You have to apply. It's not automatic.
Right. And all EPF members whose salaries have been impacted by COVID-19 can now withdraw up to 10,000 ringgit. Additionally, there'll be a 300 ringgit one-off payment to all frontliners. And there's a very interesting point. I don't think we mentioned it earlier, but there's the JASA allocation will be reduced, but the finance minister didn't specify the amount. So,
Hezril, how out of date are you? It's JCOM.
Oh my goodness. And I was the one telling you that it was JCOM yesterday, and yesterday's Pope Pope.
Exactly. So, okay, fine. The JCOM allocation has been reduced. And there is also going to be an e-belia 50 ringgit e-wallet one-off payment that is increased now to 100 ringgit. And students above the age of 20 will be able to receive this as well.
Yeah, so like I said earlier, it'll be interesting to find out with our guest, you know, what the extension of existing policies will mean moving forward, wouldn't it?
Send us any questions you might have about the amended budget, such as it is. And, you know, especially if you wonder how it impacts you, you can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now, though, is Tricia Yeo, CEO of Ideas. Tricia, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
So what stands out to you from the updated or the amended budget?
So I think the big thing that really stood out was the expansion of iCNR, right, which allows all EPF members whose incomes have been affected to withdraw up to 10,000 from account one. I'm sure you've gone through this already in your show. There are some small changes here and there, but that's the big one that stands out for me. And it stands out for a couple of reasons. It stands out also because I think the person who was, you know, really championing this proposal to increase it up to 10,000 ringgit was none other than our former Prime Minister, Najib Razak. And, well, I mean, the whole thing the amendments and the whole process of this amendment and the public interest in the generated in this particular budget debate process, I think to me is also a fascinating development and something that we have not really seen prior to this. I mean, in the previous years, when you look at budgets, there'll be a lot of fanfare surrounding the budget day itself, where the budget is tabled in Parliament, but not so much with regards to the debate. I mean, it's only now that people are realizing, hey, you know, there's a stage of policy debate, there's a stage of committee debate, there are actually several readings that you need to go through in Parliament. So I think it's interesting to me, and I can talk a bit more about that if you want, but I mean, I'm not sure whether you want to talk about the content first or my observations about this entire process.
Well, let's talk about the process, because that's something that we addressed with our guest earlier on, Bridget Welsh, who described it as, I think her word was budget parliamentary theatre, but definitely the word theatre was a big one for her. So what's your take? We've had people saying that they weren't even aware, or rather they're not used to it maybe being as transparent as it is right now.
Well, I take a little bit more of a positive view of it. I believe that it's precisely because there's such political fragmentation now that for the first time in a long time, the government actually has had to be a lot more conciliatory in providing concessions, in actually negotiating with members of opposition and people on the other side of the divide, and also from political factions within the same ruling coalition. So, you know, you saw that some of the disagreement came from within UMNO itself, right, from Najib Razak and other people. So I think this actually increases the policy competition. It increases the budgetary competition even within the House. And this is where I think MPs can start to consider their roles much more seriously, activate their roles as the country's policymakers that's supposed to be their responsibility to debate, to negotiate, put forward ideas on policy. I mean, people are actually watching Parliament process this time, and this was never really the case before. So I think it's a really good opportunity for both the government and the opposition to show their constituents where they stand on different policy issues.
Yeah, I think it's a positive move there. But speaking of conciliation, Tricia, it looks that there were some concessions made with amendments being raised today by the finance minister. Perhaps we can start by looking at the expansion of ICNR. The scheme now allows all EPF members whose incomes have been affected to withdraw up to 10,000 ringgit from account one. What are your thoughts on this?
So I think when it was initially announced in budget speech itself, we had already, as in Ideas, had already expressed some concerns, even when the limit was at 6,000 ringgit, and then it was further expanded to 9,000, and then now expanded to 10,000 ringgit. So it's not just limited to those who lost their jobs, right? But to those who have had some kind of loss in income or serious loss in income. I'm not sure how this is going to be qualified. We already expressed concern at that time because we felt that this would impact the long-term financial security of these individuals and their families when they actually retire. So, you know, budget adjustments must be considered holistically. And if you look at the statistics, I think we have shown that, or the statistics do show that 70% of all EPF members from age 55 to 60 actually take out their EPF upon retirement in a lump sum, and that these funds actually become obsolete or they're spent within a very short 5 years. So you know that the age of Malaysians, I think we have an aging population, so that's something to establish. And the World Bank just released a good report on the aging silver population. So, I mean, essentially, what is the concern? The concern is that, you know, EPF money is not government money. EPF money is our own money, is individuals' own money, and this would have a significant impact on what happens when people actually retire. So you're spending now, but saving less for the future.
So there's also this issue, right, which is that the new ICNR is going to cost 70 billion ringgit. And Subang Jaya MP Wong Chen pointed out that EPF is not going to receive sufficient inflow to sustain this program. Do you think that they can afford this move?
I think we do need to ask what the budget adjustments mean. So this is the other thing that I would actually call for. I would call for some more transparency from the Minister of Finance to inform the public, you know, what are the public finance implications of these adjustments? And this would include implication to EPF itself. I would like to know, you know, what are the final estimates of the federal government expenditure? How does this impact the fiscal deficit? Will additional borrowings be required? If yes, from where? I know that the Minister of Finance has previously talked about, you know, the government ecosystem, but I think we need to know a little bit more. I mean, yes, he has shown the figures within the original budget speech, but how do the amendments affect the original figures? And, you know, what are the resultant, you know, debt to GDP ratios as well? So within all of these questions, I definitely agree with what YB Wong Chen has said, that we do need to understand what the implications are on EPF itself. And I mean, mind you, right, like EPF is an important institutional investor in a lot of Malaysian GLCs, in a lot of our bonds and our funds. And EPF essentially represents interests of all Malaysians. So not just yes, we know that these 8 million members that qualify for this will benefit immediately up front, but we need to analyze what the implications are for the long term in the future, and also for the rest of Malaysians whose monies are all placed within EPF.
On the line with us today, Tricia Yeo, CEO of Ideas, talking to us about the amendments to Budget 2021. We're going to be continuing to roll through some of these. If you have any questions, do send them our way. That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bring forth Moolah, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:50 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Hezril. On the line with us is Tricia Yeo, CEO of Ideas, talking to us about the amendments made to Budget 2021 as we literally heard it pass today with a voice vote. If you have questions, send them our way. And among those, we heard earlier a comment from Zane Abrams, who asked a number of questions that I think in some ways, Tricia, you've already addressed, which is where's the revenue coming from? Will there be more debt? But I did want to ask you this one, which we didn't address, which is, will the vaccine open up the economy? Is that something that you think we are relying on in order to see some sort of influx of income? It's a chain effect, right? So if we get the vaccine, we're able to open up the economy. If we open up the economy, then we're able to gain more money. Is that something that we are actually anticipating?
That's the theory of change, or the logical flow of what would be expected if we had the vaccine. But I think, you know, as well as anyone, that the speculation that the vaccination will be made available, but also commercially available. I mean, even if it's available, I think it's only limited to a number of Malaysians at the moment. And so there will be some form, I think, of lockdown if the wave, the fourth wave, perhaps at that time, will continue to rise. So I think, okay, this ventures into a very difficult terrain where you have to balance between the public health concerns, which I think the Malaysian health system has, you know, done very well to accommodate, because we do have quite a robust health system. And it's all about the health system, right? What's the capacity of the health system, the number of beds, the number of medical frontliners to care for these people versus the economic impact. So I think there needs to be we need to analyze what the lockdown has meant for Malaysia. Once we get the results, the economic results of quarter three and quarter four, we have like representation of the bulk of the year 2020, at least starting from March onwards when the lockdown happened, and then weigh that against the public health consequences. I mean, there are already experts that have pulled together figures, and I'm not a public health expert, so I can't really weigh in on this, but I just want to say that we need to have evidence-based policy decision-making in that, if lockdowns are not, if total economic lockdowns actually result in greater poverty, because we do know that the lockdowns have impacted the B40 and the wage earners, the temporary wage earners, much more so than the M40 and the T20. I mean, okay, let's not talk about the T20, but we know that the poverty rates increase among the B40 when there are economic lockdowns. So we have to weigh the consequences of that and really ask ourselves the question, you know, what is the impact of the economic lockdown? And this kind of prolonged economic lockdown as well, I think there needs to be a mechanism in which the local governments, the state governments need to be brought in for greater consultation and agreement and negotiation with the federal government as to which parts of the state and which parts of a certain district can in fact be opened up and perhaps create like little bubbles around that area and just to ensure that the commercial activities are on the rise. And I think other experts have also talked about, you know, the need to open up international borders, perhaps to create like travel bubbles or even travel balloons, as it were. So I mean, the long answer to your question is that yes, vaccine, but even before vaccine, we have to already look at our own policy decision-making processes because we cannot afford the economy to shrink by another, you know, almost 20% as we saw in quarter two. This will have a very significant long-term impact on already existing poverty-stricken families. So we know that in order to increase prosperity, the ultimate solution is always, you know, to ensure that the enterprises can continue functioning. These are your MSMEs that represent, you know, a large percentage of our economy. And we do have to think about what's right for industry.
Right. And on a smaller level, there were some small changes, like the additional one-off 300 ringgit allowance for frontliners, as well as the automatic loan moratoriums for the B40 and SMEs. What kind of impact will these sorts of changes have?
The 300 ringgit allowance for frontliners, I suppose this, it's direct cash assistance. And I do think it's a nice one-off thank you to all those who have been working really hard throughout this year in the efforts to fight the pandemic. Long-term impact, nothing much really. I mean, this 300 ringgit is not very much, and I think it will be spent quite quickly. I mean, if there was any thought that this money would, you know, go into the consumption cycle within the economy, I think it could have some impact, but it really is not very much. The automatic loan moratorium for B40 and SMEs, for the B40s, I have no issue there. I think the B40s would definitely appreciate those automatic loan moratoriums. But it's only for 3 months, right? So up to December. And I think the question remains about the rest of the 2021 year ahead. And I'm not sure what the government is thinking along those lines. Tomorrow I'm speaking with someone from the Ministry of Finance at a panel debate. So perhaps I can ask him there. But with regards to the MSMEs, I mean, I was wondering, because MSMEs, the micro SMEs, okay, but like the small and medium enterprises, it still represents quite a widespread of entities, right? It goes all the way from, you know, companies that are just maybe 1 to 2 people all the way to 20 people. I think this is where the devil's in the detail. The discretion given to banks, well, I mean, if it's automatic, then they don't really need to provide any documentation at all. But I did wonder about the larger number, the larger employee-sized SMEs, because I would imagine that the smaller ones would be automatically exempted, but I'm not sure about the larger ones. So I do have some questions about that. The impact of these changes, well, the B40, I think, yeah, it just allows them additional time. But of course, that ever-present concern is that once the moratorium ends, how they'll be able to come back and bounce back into being able to repay their loans. Because as we all know, the moratorium is not an exemption for those months itself, but it basically accumulates, right? So it really involves very good financial planning. And I do hope that the individuals concerned will also couple their moratoriums with some kind of financial planning assistance from Bank Negara and other entities.
Tricia, thank you so much for speaking with us this evening.
Thank you.
That was Tricia Yeo, CEO of Ideas, with her thoughts on the amendments to Budget 2021. If you have any questions, any comments on the budget passing that you'd like to send through, do keep them coming. That number to call is 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.